Good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you all to the September 5th meeting of the Board of Education, and I would ask our superintendent to please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item 3, changes in the meeting agenda. There are a number of changes. We have G1 cover page. What did I make a mistake? I put the form. What is it? G1? Yeah, I had it here. G1. Which changes in the personnel. Personnel matters instructional, G1. Okay. Now turning to item 4, public participation. This will be our first of two public participation sessions, up to 30 minutes in length. We ask each individual to limit his or her comments to 3 minutes. And we have a request from Morgan Persky. Welcome.
Hello, my name.
You can pick it up.
Okay, that's fine. Hello, my name is Morgan Persky, and I am currently a senior at Ward Melville High School. I will be discussing the importance of sleep and advocating for later school start times at Ward Melville. Sleep is one of the most important parts of our day. This vital biological activity gives individuals the energy needed to perform even the simplest of tasks. Unfortunately, sleep is not prioritized in society and often needs to be sacrificed by high school students. Multiple studies have shown that students do not receive an optimal amount of sleep. Most adolescents need about 9 hours of sleep per night. However, nearly two-thirds of adolescents receive 8 hours of sleep, and two-fifths get under six. Ward Melville should start classes later in the morning to allow students to get more sleep, as sleep deprivation not only inhibits academic performance, but hinders the ability to drive and also negatively impacts an individual's physical and mental health. When students do not get the optimal 8 to 10 hours of sleep that they need, they lose their ability to succeed academically. Students have trouble retaining information, coping with stress, and staying focused. These effects can have a serious impact on grades in school. Compared to other strategies for boosting academic performance, delaying the start of the school day is easy and efficient. One study estimated that beginning classes just 1 hour later produces the same effect as shrinking class sizes by one-third or replacing a teacher with the 50th percentile of effectiveness with one in the 84th. Additionally, sleep deprivation greatly increases the risk for car accidents. It has been proven that getting 6 hours of sleep can lead to effects equivalent of a blood alcohol concentration of 0.05 to 0.1%. Drivers experience processing delays, poor coordination, and even microsleeps while behind the wheel. Even with proper amounts of sleep, teenage drivers are at a higher risk for getting into an accident due to their driving inexperience. Adding sleep deprivation to this inexperience, along with driving at extremely early hours in the morning and fighting their shifting circadian rhythms, the risk for a car accident is greatly compounded. High schools in particular should start classes later in the morning to accommodate for the biological changes that occur during teenage years. Adolescents undergo a sleep phase delay, also known as a change in their circadian rhythm. Teenagers' bodies secrete melatonin, a hormone that regulates sleep, at around 10 to 11 p.m. rather than at 8 to 9 p.m. as it does before puberty. So teenagers feel the urge to stay up later at night. Nevertheless, 8 to 10 hours of sleep is still needed. Adolescents therefore feel the need to wake up later in the morning. Several studies show that teens cannot get out of this melatonin-induced sleep until 8 o'clock a.m., making school start times extremely desirable. Other schools on Long Island have shifted their start times back and have found very positive results. Syosset High School begins their day at 7:39, and Roslyn High School begins their day at 8:05. Both of these schools are significantly higher than Ward Melville on rankings in Newsday and other high school rankings lists, making their way to the top 35 schools in the nation. Jericho High School begins even later, starting at 8:59 p.m. It is no coincidence that they are ranked the number one public school in the nation, according to the NEESH 2019 Best Schools District rating. Sleep deprivation is a national epidemic occurring in high school students, which can and must be addressed by the Three Village Administration. Thank you.
Okay. Morgan, thank you very much. I appreciate your comments. It's been a concern many of us have had, the start time. We share many of your concerns. There are many, many challenges, and it doesn't mean that they can't be dealt with. Transportation issues, athletics, obviously some of the districts in Nassau County that you just mentioned, they're dealing with those issues. But there are many, many things that we'd have to be dealt with. But the points that you make are very, very valid, very, very valid, and very, very sympathetic, quite frankly.
Yeah, I want to commend you. I mean, it was an excellent presentation. I appreciate the presentation of information. And it's also notable that the state of California, I'm sure you know, just passed a statewide law that classes can't begin before 8:30. And I think that maybe points to a strategy that you may want to consider. And, you know, I think that your activism is laudable. And what you may want to do is reach out to people in other school districts, because as President Connors was just saying, that part of the issue, I think that we all probably agree that we would like to see later start time, but we've studied this issue and found that the problem comes in that if the other schools around don't do it, it, you know, creates problems with our sports program and other issues, transportation, there's other sort of knock-on effects. But if everyone changed, it, I think, would be much more palatable. So that may be one way to direct your activism, to find other people in other districts that want to join together with you.
Morgan, I'm just going to reiterate what Mr. Connors and Mr. Kornreich has said. First of all, you did an excellent job in presenting. I know it can be a little intimidating standing up in front of everyone and speaking, but obviously your research is well substantiated. And last year, I was very hopeful, actually, because the Suffolk County superintendents had a meeting to discuss this issue at the beginning of last year. And I went to that meeting thinking, this is great, because now we're all going to be on the same page. They'll all make the change, and this will help our district to be able to move forward with those changes as well. And there just was probably two or three of us that wanted the change. The others said they're not making a change. They just said it would compromise their transportation costs for the district, that they were very concerned about other programs regarding BOCES that their students participated in. And therefore, moving it back by half an hour, their research that they had presented to us said that moving it back a half hour would have limited to no impact, that it had to be at least an hour that it would be moved back. And so that was very disappointing and disheartening, because I had held a chair at a committee in 2011 when Neil Lederer was our acting superintendent, with a multidisciplinary group of teachers from the secondary and elementary level. And we encountered a lot of different challenges, but one of the main challenges was that if we're the only school district changing, that's going to have a negative impact, that we could not stand alone. If you look at the schools in Nassau County that you've mentioned, they're beginning to move in that direction. So when a group of them begin to do that, that is very powerful. Jericho is not a school district that has a lot of athletic teams, so they have a little bit more latitude to do that. But they are an amazing school district, and they are ranked higher. One of the things that I'm glad you brought up the niche ratings, because it gives me an opportunity to make a statement. Three Village, one of the categories is considered diversity. And on diversity, we receive a C because we don't have the diversity that some of the other school districts that you mentioned have. And they're all ranked like a B+ or an A or an A+. So that impacts Three Village, which is unfortunate. I, you know, having been in this district a really long time, I'm incredibly proud. And you're a perfect example of the pride of Three Village in the way our students are able to articulate. So I thank you for that opportunity to come and speak with us this evening.
Morgan, this is a national discussion taking place. I'm glad you brought it up here, quite frankly. I have a daughter who's a guidance counselor in West Hartford, Connecticut. She's been there 17 years. And she's part of a task force that's being done by the city of West Hartford and the school system. So they have 10 elementary schools, 3 middle schools, and 2 high schools, so far as about changing the start time. Already, they start at 7:35, so they're talking about possibly another hour or so after that. But it has a domino effect internally, as we've mentioned, so far as transportation and so forth, but also externally with the other school districts, athletics and so forth. So it's a complicated issue, but it needs to be further discussed, and I appreciate you bringing it to the table today. Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to address the board at this time? Okay. Seeing none, number 5, minutes, the minutes of August 22nd, 2018. May I have a motion on that, please? Anybody?
So moved.
Dr. Kerman, second. Ms. Germano? Any discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Abstention? The minutes are approved. Turning now to 6 reports, our student representative report, who's going to tell us how wonderful things have gone the past couple of days. Aren't you telling us that?
Well, classes started yesterday. Orientation happened on the 29th for the sophomores and the new students coming into Three Village. All the students were very excited, especially for the Chromebooks that they received for all 3 years that they get them for high school. Fall sports started on August 20th, except for football, which started on August 13th. Student government has its first club meeting tomorrow, as well as other clubs who have had their meetings either yesterday, today, or will be having it within this week or next week. And also student government has started to plan for homecoming. Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much. We have a report this evening, a brief report this evening on safety and security. I'll defer to our superintendent at this point.
Yes, it is my pleasure to introduce our coordinator of safety and security, Jack Blaum. Mr. Blaum will also be our featured presenter at our safety and security forum, community forum, which will be held on September 13th at Murphy Junior High School at 7 o'clock p.m. So this is kind of a prelude to that. There will be a messenger call and a flyer posted to the website tomorrow. So without further ado, Mr. Blaum.
Thank you, Cheryl, very much. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to update you at the beginning of this year on where we stand with our safety and security and compliance as well. Some target hardening, just to reiterate, we have our default lockout posture. At the end of arrival to the beginning of dismissal, our buildings are locked out. And you know, the advantage to that is in the past, if there was a crime committed or a bank robbery near one of the schools, the custodian or other staff members would have to run around the building locking the doors. So now, once the kids are in the morning, until we release in the afternoon, the doors are locked. So that's a very protective measure. The security vestibules are up and running, and I'll talk a little bit at some of the new things that we've done in the security vestibules. We do have bullet-resistant film on windows. I'm not going to tell you, if you want to see me privately, exactly where those are located. We do have bullet-resistant film on much of the glass. All the doors are single-key lockable. If we do have to enter a lockdown where the classroom doors or other ancillary places have to be locked, it's a single key from the inside, locks the door immediately. And we're conducting our first lockdown drill is this Friday at 8:40 a.m. at the high school. We do have to do mandated lockdown drills as well as our evacuation drills. Technology, we do have an extensive surveillance system that you have supported over the last few years. There will be enhancements to that with smart schools, which we're moving along in the approval process right now.
Do you want questions?
Go
during
ahead.
Or after?
What's that?
When do you want questions? During
what,
or
you're
how,
more
how,
than welcome.
How do you feel like your coverage is of the buildings at this point? Do you feel like are there blind spots? Or?
There are some. Yeah, and we're also converting all the analog cameras to IP or Internet Protocol cameras, so they're a little bit of a sharper image, more from an analog to a digital. One great thing about the system in this district, and we found this out, that when the older analog cameras were installed, they ran network cable to those older cameras. So the great part about the analog to the digital camera is the cabling is already in place. So that's going to be a very efficient and very simple changeover. I think our coverage is good. Things change, you know, the personality in a building sometimes changed from when we first put the cameras in, but we do have the capability in-house now. James can have our own staff move cameras for us, which has saved a tremendous amount of time and funding. We have an automated lockdown notification and alert system. When several locations in the building, there are automated lockdown buttons that are once pressed, a voiced over with a type of Claxton horn, emergency horn, comes over for about 4 minutes. I set the time to 4 minutes because if statistically most active shooter situations are finished in 4 minutes, and it's a little bit, if you've ever been in the building for a lockdown drill, it's a little bit unnerving to hear that message and that coming over the PA, and I'm actually using that to, I think, our advantage to distract the person that's in the building committing the crime. So I think it kind of fits the timing well. That also sends a message to the police department instantly as well when that is pressed. ID scanning with database interface just finished about 3 hours ago today. Fred just finished setting it up. We have licensed driver's license readers in the schools. We have a whole new system. It's hooked into the sexual predator database. It allows us to put people that maybe you as a board would put on a district-wide trespass notice. We can put that person's information into the system. If that person comes in the building and scans their license, we'll get an email and text alert to certain people knowing that one of the what I call the no-fly people are in one of our facilities. So there's a lot of neat stuff we can put order of protections in, custody issues as well. So if there's a parent that is not allowed to pick up a child and their child's in Angelinas and they hit the license reader in Angelinas, it'll alert that that person cannot leave with their child. So they won't even have to enter the building. We have direct communication with the police department. We have these red phones. It's like the bat phone. You can pick that up. It goes directly to the dispatcher. There's no dial tone. It goes directly to the dispatcher. We're in the process of enhancing that system as we speak because we're finding that Verizon is not supporting copper. For those that know a little bit about our phone system, Verizon is really, really looking to get out of the copper business in this area. So we're going to be actually converting those red phones over to our internet-type phone system, which is much more reliable than the copper. Because every time there's a heavy rain or a storm, much of our copper makes its way, actually, interesting enough, a little trivia, through a box underground right by the corner of Nichols Road and 25A. That particular vault fills up with water, and then we lose our copper. So that's something that we're changing. Training, a lot of great training here, thanks to Superintendent Carlson. We are getting a lot of great stuff here. We're doing bleeding control, and with bleeding control, one of the neat parts about bleeding control is we just sent our team of instructors from here to Mount Sinai School District and Miller Place. So it was kind of nice seeing people. The instructors were actually security guards that we had trained here, and they actually trained a lot of staff in both of those school districts. So it was kind of made me feel good to see our people with our security uniforms doing bleeding control training for two other nearby districts. Lockdown and active shooter options. I was just got an email today from the police department, a woman that runs their part of their training, and we're going to look at maybe doing some sort of active shooter recognition training for us, and we'll work on that with the superintendent's office. Bombing incidents, improvised explosives, some great training, no cost to the district. We have instructors that come here, plus we have the availability to send staff members to free training sessions in a couple different places around the country. The last one's probably really, really interesting since we are the first K-12 school district in the state to run and successfully graduate people from EMT school. The great part about the EMT school is, and Assistant Superintendent Carlson was one of the people that certified in that class, which was really great to have that type of support. In the short time, which we just finished the course, in the short time of getting the EMTs certified, we had a chief custodian, Fred Horton from Murphy. There was the lemonade day. There was a couple of dehydration cases. And it was great to see a chief custodian jumping in there to handle a couple of dehydration issues. That was great. Just over the weekend, while James's crew were getting the buildings ready, right here in this building, one of the sub-custodians had fallen onto a couple of sharp objects on a mat and caused a fairly severe laceration to his arm. And one of the new EMT, Kenny Hargraves, one of the custodians, took care of him, cleaned the wound, wrapped it up, and had him ready to go. And they actually drove him by car over to Stony Brook. So that's already had a successful outcome. We're moving forward with that emergency medical technician program here. We hope as time progresses that we can get some funding and get some equipment from the county and the state, and we'll be actually our own first responder agency turning patient care over to Setauket Fire Department and Stony Brook Fire Department. So we'll have an extra, that would be a great support system for the nurses. And we'll have a great team. We just talked recently in a meeting about, you know, if something happens where there's several people injured, now the nurse has a really great resource within most of the buildings to use the EMTs. Interagency collaboration. As you know, we have a very good relationship with the Setauket and Stony Brook Fire Departments. While you were in your exec session today, there was a fire alarm at the Jalinas Junior High School, and because of the great relationship we have, we could talk to them on the radio. Our chief custodian, Paul DiBiase, is a former chief of Setauket. Today, something that very few school districts can do, we were allowed to change a smoke detector out. They usually want a company to come in and do that. We had that smoke detector changed out while you guys were in your exec. That smoke detector was done, system reset, everything back to normal. So that's the great relationship that we have. We have shared communication with our school resource officer. Keith Murphy is unfortunately the only school resource officer in the 6th Precinct, which, you know, something that we really want to work on with the administration of the police department. That's certainly not what we would like, but we have one, and he has our radio system. So when we want to talk to him, we can talk over our school radio system to Keith. We utilize our buildings for police training. Cheryl's very generous, along with the board members, allowing the police department to train. K-9 especially trains in many of our buildings. They love using the different levels, and they do things by placing things in lockers and different parts of the building and training the dogs. So we're very, very happy that you allow us to do that. Planning. This is a time of year when our confidential building-specific plans have to be kind of tweaked and organized, and I have to get them up to Albany through a portal system by October 15th. Most of the principals have gotten them back to me. We're starting to put them together, and I'll get them upstate. They're available to all the responders now, the police department and fire department. Those are confidential plans. They have things in them about what we would do in that particular building. If you do know, you do approve in July at the reorg meeting a district-wide plan, but this is a more specific plan. It has things like confidential information and maybe special needs students that have that may need different evacuation plans. So that's located in those plans. We're always analyzing things, you know, besides creating event action plans, if you've seen that, we do create event action plans for graduation and homecoming where we are able to pass out, you know, a several-page document where people are working, what their assignment is, what their call sign is on the radio, what the medical numbers are, who's doing EMT duty, who's the nurses. We're able to hand out a plan, which because we have so many people, we're kind of required to do that, so we've been kind of way ahead of the curve on that as well. And, you know, one of the things that I always do is analyze all these things that happen. Wherever it happens in the world, if I get intel on it, I'll go kind of deep into it to see if there's something that we're missing at Three Village. You know, we do great here. We are not perfect. If I see a shooting that occurs in a particular place, I'll analyze that and see if we can, you know, tweak our. And one of the things that I, a result of that was when an estranged husband had come into the school to see his wife, a teacher, and, you know, there wasn't much vetting done there, and he kind of made his way to the classroom. unfortunately had shot her, but really the bullet had actually went through her and killed a child. So, like, just little things like that. I want to see how that husband, and we're going to make sure that does not happen here. That's what we do. School day staffing, pretty much the same, a little bit different. Everybody in building during the day is active or retired law enforcement. That's a stance that we've made here. I will say it's getting a little difficult because all the schools are looking, kind of doing the same thing that Three Village is doing, which seems to be the kind of like what happens. We start to do stuff really well. They love what we do. We're having a little trouble getting guys, but we're doing pretty good right now. We got two guards at each elementary school during the day. Over at Nassacake, we have a third security person there that's doing the pre-K. She is doing a fantastic job there. We also put a traffic person outside for pre-K. So it's, at times there are four security people at Nassacake. Three at each junior high school and a team of at least 13 at the high school. Security reporting, a little bit of stats for you. The in-building security people created 145 incident reports from them during last school year. And we're on track to go ahead of that this year. This is anything from a vaping incident to a fight to picking up intelligence to things that occur in the parking lot, contraband and things of the like. So that's a lot of activity for our people. And that's what we get. I mean, there are things that we know that happen that may not get reported or handled in the building, but I actually have 145 reports. The vehicle patrol unit is very interesting here in this district. Last year, their calendar is a little bit different. The incident reports are school year. The vehicle guys, I kind of followed like a police department format where it's January 1st to December 31st. And last year, they wrote 348 field reports. And that's everything from fire alarms to intrusion alarms to people trespassing on the property to assisting in medical calls, a bunch of different things. So they're a very, very active unit here in the district. This is something new. So we actually were the first district, and I know we're the first district in this as well. The State Education Department and the United States Education Department came up with something called this targeted violence prevention. It had a little bit of the Secret Service was involved, the FBI. They came up with a program. It's really 13 threat assessment teams. Things like when we have a student that gets put onto the radar. Maybe a teacher is walking through the classroom and sees a child doodling AR-15 assault rifles on a notepad. Could happen. You know, in today's world, it's a little bit different, and that child may go onto the radar. And when that child goes onto the radar, we are obligated now to get this threat assessment team going. It's a multidiscipline team. School resource officer may come in, administration of the building, psychologist, social worker, put a team together, and they'll look at that particular child, and there's like 13 main points, and in the case of maybe somebody talking about weapons or having a fixation on weapons, we might want to find out, do they have weapons in the house? And we'll do that. That's what the threat assessment team will do on that particular incident. Was there a recent loss? Did they lose a grandparent lately? And a lot of different things we'll look at. How are the grades going?
Have they been a victim?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of different things that we really have. You know, that we may not have in, we've been very good with this, but now this is really focused. And if you look there, it says the threshold is really, really low now. That's what they want. And I think we've been very good at this. And just in the last couple of weeks, we've had a couple of things that have occurred here in the school district with children where the threat assessment team was activated. So we're obligated to get that threshold down. So now the littlest clue. So as you know, there's no set profile for the students in particular that commit violent acts. You know, they could be high performing students, low performing students, you know, male, female. It's very different age groups. It's very hard to tell. So now any clue that comes up has to be investigated. You know, we know from Parkland shooting, there were all kinds of red flags that went up that were never followed up on. Here, you know, if somebody takes a picture on social media with a weapon somewhere in the background or whatever the case is, we go right on that and investigate that. So that's our new very low threshold, and we will also enlist the police department, probably a lot quicker than we used to if we have to. But that's the new targeted violence prevention. So, and you know, and Cheryl always is very good with this. The resources are for everybody to use in this district too. We have great resources here. You know, you were very generous in getting more staff members for mental wellness. You know, mental well-being is the key to this whole, to all this. I can lock the doors all day, but if we can work on that mental well-being part of this district, then we're going to be successful. And we're not just talking about students. We're talking about staff members as well. I'm trying to promote a little bit of an easier way for a staff member to come forward maybe on a Monday morning and say to the security people, hey, listen, you know, I had a blowout with my husband over the weekend, and I don't know, you know, I don't know if he's going to come here and do something. We want that message to the security people. So, that, you know, we're trying to get that open line of communication as well. Compliance, a little bit of a switch gear, the things that we're involved in here. We do 4-layered background checks for Dr. Dabrowski. We check every single person that gets hired, volunteers, or has anything to do with this district. A very comprehensive thing. PESH, we have to do annual PESH training. That's Public Employee Safety and Health. It's a division of the Department of Labor. I take care of all the mandated compliance training. In particular, a lot of things have to do with Mr. O'Hagan's staff, like you know, mechanical things, asbestos, electrical safety, and the like. I also am involved in our annual fire inspection. And you know, some people always say, well, what's really important? You know, there hasn't been a school fire, Jack. We're really good with that. You're right. There hasn't been a fatality in New York State in a school fire since 1954. That's right. We're very good with the fire inspection. The fire marshal from the county that does our inspection is absolutely pleased when he comes here, and I know James will echo that. But what happens is, if we don't do well on our fire inspection, we do not get certificates of occupancy. And the way the state law works, without a certificate of occupancy, there is no school. So we have to work very, very hard on that. And our next inspection is April of 2019. It moves 1 month back. So this year it was in May. Now it's going to be in April of 19. We have compliance with the Asbestos Hazard and Emergency Response Act. There is asbestos-containing building materials in all our buildings, and we manage that myself along with James and his staff. The EPA's and the New York State's lead in drinking water, we kind of went through that, you know, the last couple of years. We'll actually be doing some updating on that as well. We have eradicated really all our bad fixtures and piping, so we're in very good order with that. DASA Save and Transgender updates, if you were at the high school last week, we probably covered, I think we might have gotten around 1,300 or 1,400 people taken care of with our DASA Save and Transgender updates. And at the bottom, there's some new New York State sexual harassment. I just got a package today, by the way, that I'll share with you. By October 9th, we have to adopt a little more enhanced sexual harassment policy. And I'm sure Dr. Gary will work with you on that. And we're going to get we have to roll out training to the staff by January of next year. Two emergency apps. Screens off a little bit. On the right is the Crisis Manager app. That has, you hit one of those little icons, it tells you what to do. CPR instructions, things like that, weather emergencies, it's all on that app. But the cool one on the left, so that's the Rave Panic app. We are in full compliance with, if you remember with the media lately, there were some newspaper articles that the county had purchased a licensing for a couple different things. One was a smart 911 facility, and one was the Rave Panic app. Well, even though you may have seen it, I think the county exec did his press conference at the Kings Park High School. The Kings Park started doing it. They got bogged down. We are up and running 100%. I created, using the technology in the program, I have like these geodomes located over our facilities. Myself and Jeff tested it. When Jeff sent a message from his office, it shows right in the building via satellite where his office is. It goes right to a floor plan. The police see that. The fire service sees that. The app is up and running, and we're going to hope that all staff members, including the teachers, take advantage of the free Rave facility app and the panic app. You hit one of those buttons, it does a lot of neat things. It notifies the police immediately. It notifies the fire department. It sends a text message and an email to certain people like myself and Cheryl, so we know that there's an emergency within the building, but it works in these geodomes. It's really neat technology. That is up and running as well. This year and beyond. So smart schools, extensive additions to our surveillance system. We're hoping that the smart schools money comes through soon. I know we're tied up in approvals there, but we're actually in pretty good shape with part of the plan. And you know that we would love to work through on capital with this to get our building aid. Two perimeter gatehouses at the high school, one at each entrance. And, you know, I think we've discussed that privately on some of the details, but that would be a great enhancement at Ward Melville High School. You heard me talk about the updated ID scanning. It's working. It's running. It's all good. It's ready to go. We hooked to Megan's Law. We hooked to sexual offender, and we can put data into that. One thing we did, too, that you should know a little bit about is we're kind of testing a little bit of change in our fire alarm evacuation, the way we do it. Here's why. If you know from Parkland, that morning there was a fire drill in the school around 9:30. The staff knew that there was a fire drill. They activated the alarm, and they did their evacuation. Well, if you know that day, the kid comes in, the active shooter comes in, the first thing he does when he gets in front of the building is hits the fire alarm box, sets the fire alarm off at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And what is our normal reaction with the fire alarm? Jump up, and everybody gets up. But if you go back to and you play the odds a little bit, last fire fatality in New York State, 1954. So what we're trying to do here, and many schools are doing this, is when the fire alarm goes off, not scheduled. You know, we're also letting people know now when we do drills to staff members. They'll know that there's a fire drill at 9 o'clock in the morning. But if that alarm goes off at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we're going to get the kids up in the classroom, get them organized by the door, and just slow that process down a couple of seconds. Because if that same situation occurs in Parkland, shots are going to be heard. Now, I know Cheryl and I talk about this. Who knows what really a shot sounds like inside a building? Well, if you think it's fireworks, you don't allow that in the building as well. So, whatever any sound that sounds like a shot or a firework shouldn't be happening. And that way, that little bit of delay in Parkland would have made a difference. So, we're just going to delay that a couple of seconds here. And, you know, we have fire prevention is great here. The building's made out of very few materials that burn. So we're just going to delay that fire alarm response. The next thing we're looking at, we're starting to get some pricing on, is an automated classroom door lock system. Runs basically off Bluetooth, whereas with that one button lockdown, if the one button lockdown is hit, the door locks automatically lock. The teacher does not have to go up with a key. The doors will automatically lock. They'll also work with our current ID card, iClass HID ID card. So, you know, like say a teacher comes in, the doors are automatic, and a lot of neat things can be done with the system. We can have all the doors lock automatically at 11 o'clock at night when the custodians go home. They don't have to worry about checking all the doors or forgetting one. And when a teacher comes in the morning, the teacher can actually unlock her door with her ID card. During the day, maybe from, say, 9 to 3, the classroom door is unlocked so children can go to and from the bathroom and nurse's office or whatever they have to do. But we'll be able to do that, and it's going to help us, too, again, with the lockdown, but also with things like building use at night. When people come in at building use, we assign them to a classroom, but what sometimes happens, the kids kind of get a little rambunctious, run around the building looking for another door that they can unlock. We'll be able to time that door open from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m., and it'll automatically lock when they're done. So there's a lot of neat things, so we're looking at that as well. And if we put that through the system properly, again, our very generous building aid percentage could kick in.
If you lock that kind of lock, if you lock it down remotely, can a teacher unlock it?
Oh, yeah. From the inside, it's always unlocked for fire safety. Yes. Yeah, but it's really, you know, it just...
I mean, if there's someone in the hall and they're trying to get into a class and, you know, once you do that lockdown,
well, that's,
can we get them in somewhere?
Yeah, well, that's part of what we have to. We'll, you know, there'll be a little bit of a delay, but you know, it's what is the problem? The teacher has to get has to have the key, you know. And what we talked about at superintendent's conference, they actually had images of this. What kind of happens here? It's kind of interesting. The way the locks have to work, the door always has to be unlocked on the inside of the classroom. And so what the teachers do, and we go through this on every lockdown drill. A lot of them have it. Takes a little bit of time. They'll put the key in and turn the lock, the key, in the direction that they're supposed to. The door will lock on the outside. But what will happen is, it's, I guess, human nature to grab that handle on the inside. So they put the key in, turn the lock in the direction it's supposed to go, and then just check it. And what happens? It moves. So we'll turn it the other way. So there's a little bit of, yeah, there's a little bit to... So we will look into that. But, you know, the teacher has the availability. Now, the door is locked. Think about this. When we hit the automated lockdown system, the door will lock, but the teacher still has the ability to peek out. And that's part of what we instruct the teachers. When a lockdown goes in, you're supposed to just do a quick glance and, you know, grab somebody and pull them into the nearest room. So that'll still be able to happen. But we won't have that issue with the keys. So there's a lot of neat stuff happening. Again, I'm always available for questions. I'm available for questions now. I think we have a community meeting coming up next week, so I'm kind of looking forward to that, a chance to get out and let people know what we're doing. I think I'm going to duplicate basically what I did at Murphy, because I think that was what prompted this meeting. There were people that could not make that Murphy meeting, and I think we deserve to give them all the information we possibly can. With that, I'll take any questions. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks.
Thank you for your leadership.
Jack was being a little bit humble about the Rave app. We are the first school district to have that completely up and running. So kudos to Jack for all that he does.
Turning to item 7, informational items to the board. Are there any items that we'd like to bring to the board's attention, or... Number 8, items for board discussion? None? Okay. Turning to items for board action. And we're going to turn now to D, district goals. Kathy, do we have that update? Here we go. Well, we'll get it up there. Here we go. As you can see, the district goals are centered on 4 different areas: student achievement and engagement, safety and security, budget development, and community engagement. For each of these, we have a vision, and the vision is listed here under student achievement and engagement. I think it's worth spending a few minutes on this. Under student engagement, achievement and engagement, establish a district-wide evaluation criteria and review progress of student cohort groups. Provide a broad range of enriching opportunities for all students through collaborative, comprehensive, digital diverse programs, service projects, and co-curricular activities. Under safety and security, provide a safe and secure learning environment. Implement a progressive approach to security that prioritizes student, staff, and school safety, and create school environments and classroom milieus that emphasize student and staff well-being. Under budget development, the budget will reflect the academic and financial values of the community and will be structured to support all aspects of the educational program and maintenance of district facilities. And lastly, and very importantly, community engagement. Broaden community awareness and advocacy for public education. Provide opportunities designed to strengthen school community partnerships and engage stakeholders in diverse programs and district-related activities. And for each of these 4 areas, we have goals listed for 2018-19. I'm not going to go over all of them and so forth. But it's built on these 4 major areas. We've been using this for a number of years now. We've been very, very pleased with the approach. Any comments from my colleagues?
Yeah. So, first of all, I appreciate the addition of the of that last point under safety and security. That represents a change, an addition from our from the previous version. I appreciate the, that addition. Another thing that I might suggest that we consider maybe it would be under budget development was that I've been very impressed by the administration's efforts to explore programs like the Academy and the first iteration of the pre-K program. There were explorations about bringing some BOCE stuff in-house. And, you know, I think that the broad theme of this stuff was to try to find other ways to serve both the student body and maybe the broader community in ways that are revenue neutral or even revenue positive. And I would like to encourage that kind of really creative thinking to continue. So maybe we might want to consider that as a goal to continue to explore those kind of programs.
Okay.
We can certainly add that and have it for the board on the 26th.
Okay.
I'll let you guys figure out the language.
Okay.
So rather than approving the goals tonight, maybe we'll just defer until the meeting of the 26th with that one addition. Okay, that's what we will do. Turning to E, the approval of a contract with outside service provider for special educational services. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Mr. Kornreich, second. Ms. Regolia. Any discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Abstention? Motion passes. Turning to F, the CEQA determination in connection with 2018-19 capital improvement projects. Jeff?
This is the first step towards our the work that we're planning at Nassau-Keag for improving some of the parking area, taking down two of the portable classrooms, and also putting some securing the field from Pond Path. Right now is wide open for a car to drive onto the field. Put up some kind of barrier there, something that looks nice, some kind of barrier. That was included in our capital projects for this year. The exterior door frame and hardware replacement is to tie all the projects into a work within the building itself, so it makes the entire project eligible for our building.
May I have a motion on that, please? Okay, go ahead.
So just for the record, I just want to throw out there that when you're planning that barrier, I'm not sure what form that barrier is going to take.
You went on it.
Right, I know, but just to the extent possible, I'd like to see the use of stones and trees rather than like a...
Yeah, we don't want to just put a guardrail.
Yeah, right. So,
right, exactly. Something right. That looks nice.
Great.
Yes.
Thank you.
Ms. Regolia, motion. Second. Ms. Bovenka. Any discussion? Further discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Abstention? Motion passes. Turning to G, personnel matters. As I mentioned before, we have replacement pages, item G1, schedule A1, and item G2, schedules B6 and B7. May I have a motion, please, on G1, instructional. Mr. Kornreich, second. Ms. Regolia, any discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Abstention? Motion passes. Gary, anything? Okay. Turning to personnel matters, non-instructional, G2. May I have a motion on that, please? Mr. Kornreich, second. Ms. Regolia, any discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Abstention? Motion passes. Gary, anything? Very good. Thank you. Turning to H, the recommendations of the Committee on Special Education, Subcommittee and Accommodations 504 plan for the meeting dates stated. We have a motion on that, please. Ms. Bablinka and Mr. Kornreich, all in favor? Opposed? Abstention? Motion passes. And turning to I, the recommendations of the Committee on Preschool Special Education for the meeting dates stated. May I have a motion on that, please? Anybody? Ms. Blavinka, second Ms. Regolia. All in favor? Opposed? Abstention? Motion passes. Turning to item 10, informational items of interest. Are there any informational items we'd like to bring?
No, we don't take any action on that thing that we discussed in executive, right?
No. No, I don't believe we are.
No, not yet.
No. Any informational items? I don't believe so. Turning now to our second public participation session, is there anyone who'd like to address the board at this time? Seeing none, may I have a motion for adjournment? Dr. Kerman, second Ms. Blavinka. Good evening, everyone.